I learned a new verb this week while I was researching for this sermon. The verb is, are you ready? Othering.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, it's not a pretty verb.
It's not a verb.
Well, it's such a new word, as you can tell, that my spell checker kept rejecting it as I was typing this week, suggesting instead the following words it feels I must have meant instead, like mothering or bothering or smothering. All related, I think. So what is othering? And all English majors, I apologize to, but one website actually called othering or nootheres.com or nootheringcom, something like that, defined it like this. Othering is any action by which an individual or a group becomes mentally classified in somebody's mind as not one of us. Othering is when you make somebody an other. People who look and act like me, who are part of my tribe, are good and they are safe. People who look and act different are not part of my tribe. They are other, they are threatening, they are bad. They need to be controlled, they need to be set apart, eliminated. They need to be othered. Now, 200,000 years ago when we lived in caves, the mental process of othering was a powerful survival tactic. We needed to be part of a close-knit tribe who would look out for us in exchange for knowing that we'd help look out for the tribe as a whole. This was important. That's a saber-toothed tiger. It's other, it's dangerous. Chase it away. Throw sticks at it, something. This is our watering hole. It's ours. This herd of elk is the one we are following, and we will fight off anyone else who threatens to take it. There's even aspects of it in the Bible. We're finding as we're reading through the book of Exodus right now in our Bible study. All sorts of warnings to the Israelites to don't be like those others. Don't be like the Hittites and the Amorites and the Canaanites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and as my Baptist pastor used to add, and the mosquito bites. Drive them out, destroy them, other them, because you don't want to be like them because they're bad. Okay, we're several thousand years later, and we live in a slightly different situation. There are 7.1 billion of us on a very tiny and fragile planet. 7.1 billion of us, that's almost 15 billion feet walking around. We can't afford to other. We can't act like cave dwellers or Bronze Age nomads because we live on a much smaller planet now. In a nuclear age, tribal spats can destroy the earth. An unwise sharing of resources destroys the environment and makes a divided world of the very, very rich and the very, very poor. We can't afford to other anymore. Back before the kids were around, or at least before we had two kids hanging around, Bart and I used to do a lot of bicycle touring around the country and in Canada and Mexico, on our tandem bicycle. Now, a young couple, we were actually young back then, a young couple riding a tandem bicycle is a little unusual, but it's about as cute and unthreatening as you can imagine. But it was fascinating to watch people's reactions as we would ride into their field of view, as we would come into a town and there'd be people out and about. And we were like a rolling Rorschach test. You know those ink blots where you go, when I look at them, it's always, oh, bats. It's always bats. Vampire bats. Scary, carnivorous vampire bats. I don't know why. That's just me. But we were like a rolling Rorschach test. Whether they were in a car, on the sidewalk, or sitting on a porch, someone would just catch sight of us. And before they had a chance to consciously think about it, people's face would change. They would either light up with a big smile, or they would scowl this frowny thing. Now, I'm not a neurologist. I don't play one on TV. I'm not a sociologist, but I think people's reactions happen at a pre-conscious level when they see something that is outside of their everyday reality. I think it was not so much, oh, how nice, a couple on a tandem riding by, or, oh, how dreadful, a couple on a tandem riding by. It was more basic. It didn't get to a conscious thought level. Here's a strange thing registering on my subconscious. And a strange thing is either a cool new opportunity or a threatening unknown. Without thinking about it, it was for them, well, if it was for them a threatening thing, we would get the sour scowl. We got othered. A protective scowl went up, and then we knew when they were like, not to strike up a conversation with them because it would be an unpleasant experience for both of us, or all three of us in this case. Now, sometimes the othering could be more aggressive. There's something about a couple on a tandem that causes some people in large steel monstrosities with V8 engines to get all weird. People would come up right behind us and yell or honk, or a thing called locomotiving. Have you heard about this? Where if you have a big diesel engine, if you come right up in front of you and then you floor the gas, or the diesel in this case, huge billows of black smoke come out of unburned hydrocarbons and leave you in this black cloud. And you can hear them going, woohoo, yeah, on the way out. Sometimes they'd drive in close to be a little scary. And, I understand. I mean, we were wearing Lycra. It's terrifying. We might hurt them. Now, obviously, the behavior was irrational. But it was very real and very scary. But here's the thing. When we got into town, Barb and I could get to the campground. We could put on jeans and a T-shirt and walk into and park the tandem somewhere. Walk into town, and that threatening guy in the pickup truck who's now having a beer at the bar, he'd be the sweetest guy on the planet. He would be sweet as pie tortoise because now we weren't other. We were temporarily othered, and we had a choice in the matter. We had a choice to be othered. If we were on a tandem, we'd get othered. If we would get into civvies, then, yeah, we were fine. We were situationally othered. But imagine you're an African-American teenage male. You can't get off and park your color. You're always being othered, and it doesn't stop when you put on a pair of jeans and a T-shirt. In fact, put on a hoodie, too, and someone will shoot you. Or say you're confined to an electric wheelchair, or you are homeless, or you are transgendered, or you don't speak English. The othering process aimed at you is 24/7. And there's no parking it on the side of a building. It's who you are. And it can be deadly. And over the past year, we've seen it again and again and again and again. 50 years after Martin King's powerful and prophetic call to economic justice, racial harmony, and the struggle for peace, to the creation of what he called the beloved community, we still see scenes like Ferguson and Baltimore, and we don't see the thousand unfilmed atrocities against people of color, against immigrants, against differently abled folks, against gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and queer folk, the poor. Name your other. We all got them. We all have our others. Nadia Boltz-Weber's might be different from mine or yours, but we all got them. The church, to its shame, is not immune from othering. As Martin Luther King observed half a century ago, Sunday morning at 11 o'clock is still the most segregated hour of the week. Churches are as tribal as any other human institution. We've seen this spring in states that are enacting the so-called religious freedom laws. It's Christians doing the othering and hiding behind the positive sounding word of freedom. Freedom's always good. But it's just the same old fear and the same old hatred and the same old prejudice that King warned about 50 years ago. We just say, oh, it's religious freedom for me to hate you and treat you badly. King warned us about it 50 years ago, and Jesus warned us about it 2,000 years ago. So, as followers of Jesus, what are our options besides othering? As we've been spending this Easter season exploring, how then are we to live? That's pretty basic. We're called to live together. We are called to live in community. We are called to live in love. It's not rocket science. We're not called to live in tribes, but in inclusive, welcoming, loving, and beloved community. Because here's the thing. Christ calls us to live different. A different way of living than the tribal, othering world. Jesus said there are no others. There is only us. All children of God. All beloved of God. All the people for whom Jesus went to the cross. There's only us, all fellow human beings trying to survive and thrive in a pretty tough world, thanks very much. So when Jesus said in John 15, I am the vine and you are the branches, he was not giving us a pretty metaphor. He was getting in our faces. He was tearing at the roots of our tribalism, our othering. He was saying, I am the vine. Your tribe is not your definition. Your color is not your identity. Your culture is not what gives you strength. Your culture is not what gives you your ability or your calling. Your roots, your source, your sustenance is in me, Jesus said. Those who abide in me, I'm quoting here, those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit because apart from me you can do nothing. The fruit Jesus is speaking of is just love and nothing else. It's just love. Jesus, the vine, has nourished us with God's love, and we are called to bear fruit that is love embodied, love enfleshed, love lived out with your hands, your feet, your heart. How can we other another when we are all branches on the same vine? How can we dehumanize another when our common humanity is based on being together, children of God, even the one I call other? We are all children of God, all of us, no exceptions. And when Jesus said, love your enemies, he meant there weren't enemies, there's only the ones you love. Barb's reading a book right now by Kay Pathak, who writes that our only calling as Christians, This is a challenge. Our only calling as Christians is to love our neighbor. Not to convert them. We love our neighbors because we are converted. Because we know what it is to be grafted onto the vine of forgiveness and grace and love. Again, from John 15, you have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Now we get a powerful lesson from the book of Acts that Allison read about how that works in the world. Now, think back to that amazing story that Allison read. Here's Philip, good conservative Jewish boy, told by the Spirit of God to join an Ethiopian eunuch, the guy who was the treasurer of the warrior queen of Cush, called the Kandake, to join him in a chariot to talk about the details of biblical interpretation from the book of Isaiah. This is weird and scary on so many levels. Now, I've preached on this text a dozen times. Well, no, for you, a half a dozen times. So you don't need me to explicate it again. I just want to ask y'all, what are some of the reasons that a good, conservative, religious boy like Philip, what are some of the reasons he had to other the Ethiopian eunuch? If he were operating on a tribal basis like he was used to, what were some of the reasons that he should other this guy?
He was Ethiopian.
He's a foreigner. He's an alien. He's a different color. He spoke a different language. So yeah, he's Ethiopian. That's a scary thing. What else? Why else? He's a eunuch. Does everyone know what a eunuch is? In the book of Deuteronomy, it's very clear about who is allowed to be among the people of God, who's allowed in the temple. And anyone who's, I'll get graphic here again, just like last week, I'm doing a lot of this, whose genitalia have been crushed or removed are not worthy to be allowed in the temple. Eunuchs even do it voluntarily, we hear. So, yeah, he's a eunuch. He's a person who is going against the Bible. Bible says don't hang out with these people. He's of ambiguous gender, ambiguous sexuality. So, yeah, good reason there. Why else?
Because of his position.
His position. This guy is treasurer of the Kandake, the warrior queen of Cush. She's a powerful. She ran everything from Ethiopia to Sudan. And this guy was a person of power. He was riding a chariot, which is like the most high-tech, amazing vehicle that it was possible to drive in. He was in a stretch limo made by Tesla. Okay, this was as high-tech as it gets. Anything else? Why else? Sorry? He may have had other gods. I mean, he was apparently in Jerusalem. He may have been a convert to Judaism. It's possible. There were populations of Ethiopian Jews at the time. He may have been one from one of Solomon's many wives going back to Ethiopia and beginning a Jewish community. So that's possible, though. He may not have been a proper Jewish person. So there's a whole lot of good reasons for him not to get together with this guy. And when the eunuch says, look, here's water. What is to prevent me from getting baptized? It sounds like there are all sorts of good reasons to prevent him from being baptized. Can you imagine if Philip were a good Methodist? He would have said, oh, well, the Bible says love the eunuch but hate the sin. The discipline of the United Methodist Church clearly states that a self-avowed practicing eunuch may not be baptized. But thanks be to God, the infant church did not give us the United Methodist Book of Discipline. I mean, I give thanks for that every day. It gave us the book of the Acts of the Apostles. And the infant church did not ask the question, what do the rules say? And the infant church did not ask, how do we stay insular and pure in this strange new situation? No, the infant church asked a much more important question. And Bob, can you go to the next slide? This is the question. That's not it at all. Never mind. Go back up. I lost that slide somewhere. The question, what is God doing here? Now, that's okay. Just go back to whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah, technology is a good thing.
It was in there.
It was in there somewhere back there. What is God doing here is the question. Now, that's a great alternative to othering. When faced with something new or different or potentially scary, instead of our caveman selves asking if this person is in my tribe or not, or is this situation comfortable for me or not, we ask, what is God doing here in this new situation? And base our response on the prayerful answer to that question. It's a crucial question. It's a great question, and it's an uncomfortable question. Maybe a good one to ask every night around the dinner table. Hey, this happened to me today, or hey, I saw this today. What do you think God's doing here? Not, oh my gosh, I was so scared. Oh my gosh, God was so awful. Or blah, blah, blah. What do you think God was doing that? Ask it during that awkward moment on the on-ramp when the guy with the sign asks for a spare change and starts walking closer to your car. What is God doing here? When we watch the news portraying some particular group as alien or scary, ask, well, what is God doing here? I've got a new neighbor who loves working on apparently an entire fleet of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, which apparently requires gunning the engines repeatedly about 9 p.m. I have been asking, what is God doing here? Is the question I need to be asking. There's an earthquake halfway across the planet with destruction and death beyond what I can imagine. What is God doing here? I get a phone call from someone I've been estranged from for years. What is God doing here? Some guy shows up at church looking scary with a beard and a ponytail and an earring and... Oh, wait, that's the pastor. I'm sorry. never mind. Or how about that thing that your beloved does, the thing that makes you crazy? What is God doing here? I want you to think a minute about that question. What is God doing here? Where do you see yourself using that phrase this week? Is there a situation that you might likely find yourself in where you've been thinking, how do I stay safe or how do I try to stay unbothered in this situation and instead ask, what is God doing here? What situations do you have regularly in your life where that might be the question that reframes the situation and moves you out of othering into an act of love? Think about that for a minute. And if you feel safe, I invite you to share that with the person next to you. So let's take 1 minute to think about it and 1 minute to share about it. What might be a likely situation this week that asking, what is God doing here, might reframe the situation? And talk to your neighbor. Good discussion, it sounds like. Take that with you this week, all right? And as the week goes through, as you find yourself in a situation that you would normally be like, WTF, instead go WIGDH. What is God doing here? God has put us in this time and this place to be church. I am the vine, you are the branches. We are called to be the body of Christ, the beloved community, not just a friendly place, but a truly welcoming people who are about enfleshing God's love for each other, for the larger community, and for this whole fragile planet. What is God doing here? God's working through you, through us.